Ja, välkomna till ett nytt färskt avsnitt av e-sportspegeln med mig Ole, och så har vi med oss Viktor och Alex. Och den här gången har vi en väldigt speciell gäst, och av den anledningen att han inte är svenskfödd och pratar engelska som modersmål, så kommer vi köra avsnittet på engelska. Och med det sagt så kommer jag nu gå över till just engelska. Our guest today is Richard LaRoche. Is that pronounced correct?
That's correct.
And Richard is an ex-Navy SEAL, retired diplomat, a Counter-Strike player in Silver Snipers, and also holds talks about leadership that we are going to talk a lot about today.
Welcome.
Yeah, very much welcome. It's going to be super interesting hearing more about you. First off, can you tell us something about Silver Snipers? Because I don't think everybody knows about that.
Well, right. The Silver Snipers are 65 and over team of people who compete in Counter-Strike. Our oldest person is 77, and I think our youngest is maybe 66 or 67. There are five of us. I think the second newest member. Many of these people have been playing for quite some time, and we're sponsored by Lenovo.
Did you have any experience of Counter-Strike before?
Absolutely none. I answered an ad which wasn't for the Silver Snipers, but this was for DreamHack in Jönköping a few years ago, and they were looking to put together a team of over 65 Americans to play against the Finnish team, a Swedish team, and a German team. So they ran an ad, and it said you didn't need any experience, they would teach you. And I knew my son had played, so I thought, okay, this could be interesting. So I did, and played on the American team, and then I defected to the Silver Snipers, or was traded to the...
You got recruited immediately?
No, not immediately, because they had a full team. I think someone left for personal reasons, and then they needed to fill in. So it was probably maybe a year or a year and a half later that they contacted me and asked if I was interested.
How was it in the beginning?
It was really
the game.
Well, parts of it were easy because I have a military background. I had an operation on my left hand a few years back, so I don't have the mobility and flexibility that most people have, so I can't work the three fingers for moving my man around. I have to rely more on my mouse, so that makes me slower and puts me at a bit of a disadvantage. So it took me a while to try and find some workarounds for that. I think the thing that astounded me and confused me the most was the fact that people seem to be able to shoot you with a short barrel, in other words, with a pistol, from far, 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 far away and be very accurate, which does not correspond to reality. And the longer the barrel, the more accurate. And I got really frustrated in the beginning. Come on, he can't do that. That's impossible. That doesn't have the accuracy. But then I had to listen to my more experienced teammates who said, it's a game.
I even think there's been studies that says that if it's too reality-based, it's not as playable. Like, it's not as enjoyable for...
That could be. That could well be. But I've gotten used to it now. It, just in the beginning, it was frustrating.
I've also heard that there's another weapon that's usually like really inaccurate how it is in real life, and that's the shotgun. That in games it's usually really short range and like wide shot, but in reality it can shoot pretty far.
Well, it can shoot far, but obviously the closer you are, the better. You get a bigger spread when it's the farther away you are on the pellets, on the actual shot that's inside the shells, can get a good spray on that. I rarely use the shotgun. My son likes that for some reason. I stay with a sniper rifle or the PS90, something like that. Some of the short K pistols. I like those for running around.
Was there anything you could bring in, like from a previous experience?
Yeah, some tactics, which I had to refine to make it work electronically, like, you know, this peeking around corners and stuff like that, and creeping up. And but I kind of have a profile of going rogue. I try to do things that the opponents won't expect me to do. So, and that comes from a military background. I won't always, you know, pick the most obvious places or do the most obvious things. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's like real life.
I would think you could benefit some from the communication.
Well, we talk about, I try to encourage my teammates to give sit reps so that everybody doesn't talk at the same time. That's called stepping on each other in the military. If everybody's shouting instructions or comments, then it you can't tell who's doing what. And but they're already very good. So don't get me wrong. My teammates are much better than me. But it was that little bit that could be improved. Like, he's over there. Where is there? Dom på väg mot B. Dom, how many? Did you see how many? You know, 3, 2, stuff like that. And also, if you're killed, you know, where were you killed? Or you kill the bomb carrier, where's the bomb? It's lying here, lying there. And it took me a while to learn all the various places, of course. I basically just play on dust, too. So when you put me on a new map, I'm lost. I'm like a babe in the
but
woods.
So that's a sit rep where you
well, no, just
information
a,
or
just a short little burst of information. I don't know if I would call it a sit rep, as it is more just a quick communication. Sometimes I'll, you know, could say, if nothing's happened and everything's quiet, okay, what's going on at B? You know, or someone will say, all quiet on B, or all quiet on A. You know. And if we're playing on the terrorists, you know, it's empty on A. Come on, plant the bomb. And maybe telling me, you know, which route it's empty on if I'm the bomb carrier. Just clean, short communication. You don't have to go into lengthy details. And as I said, not everybody talking at once.
Is it, I'm thinking about like how, because one question is because of your age, it's not usual for people to play Counter-Strike. So it's just like, it's interesting. Did you enjoy it immediately? And was it like, you're having a lot of fun?
I have a lot of fun. Yeah. It's loads of fun. Yeah, I try and play a couple of hours every day, maybe not consecutively. I just had my right knee replaced. So I'm still recovering from that, which is a major operation, and I can't sit still for more than maybe 45 minutes at a time, and then I've got to get up and exercise the knee or it'll get really stiff. So that was my second knee replacement. I have two titanium knees now. But yeah, no, I do, I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And it's good for, especially for older people. I mean, I'll be 74 next month, and it keeps your mind sharp and your eye and hand coordination. Good stuff like that, and gives you a little insight into the younger generations and how they view things.
Do you have that a lot of? Do you feel like you have a lot of communication with the rest of the community?
I don't, because when I go out, I usually just play death matches, and I use my name, the same one I use in Silver Snipers, but I mute my mic, and because I seldom hear anybody speak English. I seem to get on servers every time that are full of Russians, Ukrainians, and some people from the Middle East every now and then. Learned a lot of swear words in Russian,
I think we've all done that. Like, if you go into Dota 2, it's crazy. It's like every game, there's always Blyat and
yeah.
And you that can seems hear... like the classic model. Everyone has heard about the Russian swear words.
Yeah. And then you hear them get mad at each other, the Middle Easterners, or get mad at the Russians, or vice versa. And they try to argue in English, and they only seem to know 10 words in English, most of which are swear words. And so they're shouting at each other, and I'm thinking, come on, guys, it's just a game. But that's why I keep my mic muted. But my name is Crazy Boomer, as in a baby boomer, because I am a baby boomer. And when I post things on Instagram and Facebook and stuff, I go by Crazy Boomer, hashtag Crazy Boomer.
Yeah, Victor, you had some questions following up here, right?
Yeah, I have so many questions. When it comes to leadership, what experiences have you brought into, for instance, if we're talking about performance, because me and Alex was down in Gothenburg.
Gothenburg.
Exactly, and spoke about performance. And when it comes to sports science and sports performance, it's so many things you can bring into gaming as well. If you like the general knowledge about performance, what you need to think about when you perform. So I was thinking about how can you do the same with leadership? It can't be much different, can it?
Well. Yes and no. Obviously, there are some similarities. One of the things I think is healthy for all leaders is to, and you know, once you have an established team, of course, is to be flexible and to be able to know when to defer to another teammate, even though you're the leader. And also in a situation. Practicing what's called dynamic subordination. And that means if the leader for some reason is incapacitated or unable to do a particular thing, whatever that might be in the game, the next person knows what to do. Automatically, the next person knows what to do. And that so that the leadership can shift back and forth. In the military, in the unit I was in, we often had enlisted men. In other words, not officers, who weren't in command, but sometimes had more experience and more knowledge of particular operations that we were going to do. And the officers would say, you plan the operation, you know, and everyone would sit back and listen to them. So there's an interesting book you might want to read. It's called Stealing Fire. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, absolutely. My friend Tony is talking about it all the time, and he's a fan of you as well.
It's fantastic because it goes into flow, it goes into group flow, and they talk about dynamic subordination. And he went to study SEAL Team 6 and talk with them to find out how they can achieve this sort of flow under chaos, where everyone just seems to know what to do. And it all comes back to the very basic thing is train, 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 and train, train, train some more, and train as if under the same conditions that you're going to play. For example, I've been a rugby player for decades, and if we are not tackling in our training matches, then our tackling or our training practices, our tackling suffers in our real matches. So you should always train under the as if you were playing a match. Now, obviously, you might not want to play super hard or train super hard the day before a match or something. But that was one of the answers they got from SEAL Team 6. They use live ammunition in their clearinghouses. In other words, you've seen the movies where they run into a room and, you know, clear left, clear right. Well, they train with live ammunition, or did at least. I don't know if they still do. They might have. Government might have gotten politically correct now and said, no, that's...
But it seems reasonable to do that, because then you have to be as careful as right. You should have been with the real ammunition.
Exactly. And that gets you back to focus, too. You know, you talk about things that you can bring in from sports to esports focus. Most definitely. You've got to have a laser-like focus.
Because a friend of mine, we were talking about this podcast, and he spoke about another podcast talking about esports, and one of the legendary Counter-Strike players in that podcast said that we need to push more hours, push hours, push hours, push hours. Mm-hmm. And that's like, okay, that's true with moderation, because yes, you can push more hours, but like the focus and the quality of the hours must be so much more important than just push hours. So I think that it's really important to not misunderstand that, that just pushing time is not going to solve anything.
No, you should always be training with that in mind, the quality. Quality is generally 9 out of 10 times better than quantity, depending on what particular thing you're talking about. Same thing with sleep. You know, they talk about, oh, you should get 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night. But yes, that should be quality sleep, not just lie in bed. Oh, I went to bed at 8, but I read and, you know, blah, 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 or I tossed and turned. So yeah, quality is definitely a key part of it. But I still stand by training. You train. I mean, that's the way to get better, repetition. But repetition with it's quality training. That's what you want, quality training, not just training for the sake of it.
Is it maybe that, you know, repetition and more like many times is when it gets down to the details, like the smaller, more easy things, and quality training is more when it goes to the complex things that you want to learn?
Well, I think the quality goes through everything. It permeates the whole thing. What happens by repetition and repetition is, and especially if you move into this flow state, is you don't need to think about your next move. It just comes. And that comes from repetition.
I usually say, and I've written it in a couple of things I've been writing in the university, is that a good coach just tells his team that go out and have fun, because the job and the training has been done already. It should have been done already.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that's what the training is for. Obviously, a coach can make some tactical, strategic changes if he sees things are going down the tube. But it's like you think of an orchestra and you think of the conductor, the fellow that stands up front and leads them. He makes no noise. He's the quietest person in the whole orchestra. And he's the leader. But yeah, you should always have fun. If you're no longer having fun in any sport, then it might be time to maybe take a break. You don't necessarily have to quit completely, but back off a little bit. Back off maybe on, you know, the hours you're spending if you can. Or maybe just take a complete total break.
I have a question around that. I've heard that the Swedish military at some you know, in some practice use computer games for training. And do you have any experience of that?
Well, we didn't have computers. We barely had computers when I was in the mid-60s. Yeah. We were still talking about a Fortran computer language and punch tapes and punch cards or whatever they're called, stuff like that. So it was pretty primitive. But I do know that they have a lot of simulations that they use. I mean, it started off with basically a laser tag type of thing. But I read an interesting article probably a year ago where the U.S. military, at least, and the Swedish military may be well ahead of them. I don't know. But they're starting to look what they call it over the horizon capabilities. What are we going to need in the future? We know what we have now, but what are we going to need in the future? And they're starting to look at the Generation Z kids who will be coming of age, or maybe some at the very first part of the Generation Z, you know, will be coming of military age, looking at them and their ability to digest just tsunamis of information washing over them and make split-second decisions. And they're thinking that this could be very valuable, not just in cyber warfare or something like that, but just in general, because you know, as the old expression goes, your plans go to hell. They never survive the first meeting with the enemy or with your opponent or whatever. It's you know, it gets pretty chaotic. So yeah, they're looking at a lot of things like that, and I would think eventually, if they're not doing it already. Remember, I have no access to that community anymore unless I go back to a reunion once a year. And even then, we don't get to see all the goodies because none of us has a clearance anymore. But I'm pretty sure they're using a lot of sophisticated things like that.
What I saw in the Swedish military was they used a mod on a game called Arma 3. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, it's a shooter game that is, it's made to be a little bit more realistic than like Counter-Strike. So it's the bullet drop in the game. It's
yep.
A lot of things that are more...
Windage.
Yeah, there's more things that are meant to be more realistic. And then they have a mod on it, so they do it even more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So for regular gamers, it would probably not even be fun to play that mod because people want a little bit speed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see. And when I saw some clip of when they were training... It was just, it was a lot of more about the communication and organizing the you know, how they enter a minor city or something like
mm-hmm.
that, and how they communicate with each other. And I guess they use it for scenarios that you can't replicate without, you know, it's too difficult to try to do it in real life.
So, obviously, it's going to be. Probably the most sophisticated thing I had a look at was a quick briefing at a reunion on how the Bin Laden raid was planned, and they built a full-scale mock-up of that entire compound. Now, they didn't know what was inside of it, so that's the unknown factor. But everything else, you know, the walls and even then, it didn't go as planned. They didn't count on the backwash from the walls of the compound that brought down the helo. The militaries are constantly war gaming, and I'm pretty sure they've got a lot of sophisticated stuff all over the world. I'm sure the Russians, the Chinese, the Swedes, everybody's got it. You know, a lot of people, I'm going to put a plug in for the Swedish military here. A lot of people around the world go, yeah. You know, they haven't been to war in a gazillion years. What do they know? But you've got some really good military here. You've got some really good units. They've got lots of good toys. And you watch this stuff like on TV. What's the series that's just started now with the Swedes? It's been with the Danes. It's been with the Brits. Elitstyrkans hemligheter. It was like a reality show. And, you know, you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg of what they do to candidates that really want to get in. I mean, they would, I don't think they would reveal the whole thing. I have a lot of respect for them, put it that way. They're very good operators. Okay, that ends the commercial for the Swedish military.
I know they have on YouTube, like a YouTube series of how to, when people are doing their... basic training at the start of becoming a jägarsoldat,
right?
In Sweden, it's really, you know, it's you can really see that the Swedish military put a lot of money into the production. Like they understand that if they do it like really well, then people will probably be more interested in being recruited to the military, I guess. So you can see it, but it's really well done, and you can follow the whole platoon in their basic training.
Nice. I know they have summer camps too, where if you're, I think 15 is the age, maybe 16, where you can, they have like five or six different things you could, that are run by different units or different branches of the military, that where you can go try it like a summer camp. There was even one that was run by Tolkskolan, and I don't know if they if they teach them Russian or Mandarin or something in 2 weeks. But you know, it's just to give them a little feel for what they. There's one on survival, and I was looking at it for my younger son, who's turning 15 in July, see if there was anything he might want to do. But talking about recruiting and so forth, an interesting thing when I was a diplomat at the embassy here in Stockholm, which was from 2007 to 2010. That was the point when the Swedish military or the Swedish government decided to bring back, or not to bring back, but to do away with compulsive military, no, Lumpen, to go into an all-volunteer military. And they came to talk to us at the embassy because we had had an all-volunteer military for a long time. And they said, so how do you get people to join the military? And we all kind of sat around and thought, okay, you know, this is just, all right, well, we'll tell them, okay, well, they get 30 days paid vacation. Well, in the U.S., nobody gets 30 days paid vacation. You're lucky if you get 1 week paid, and maybe you can have a week off without pay. And so, you know, they looked and shook their heads, said, no, everybody gets that. And I said, okay, well, free medical care. Well, everybody gets that. Well, free education when they get out. Well, everybody gets that. And so in the end, we said, you're just going to have to appeal to their sense of service to the country and their sense of adventure. And then they came out with a series of really cool commercials right after that for recruiting. They're not running them anymore, but you know, things don't translate very well from one culture to the next.
Not at all.
That was far away from esports. Sorry.
No, it happens. But it is interesting because like you can really put similarities between different fields and see the commons between them. I think when it comes to like testing, Alex, did you have some questions about testing batteries and such?
Well, I mean, if you haven't worked with them a lot, then maybe it's not an appropriate question. But I know the Swedish Air Force uses a lot of programs and simulations to test their fighter pilots, or what it's called, and they test the G-factor.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything about that? Or like, how do you use that to scout new talents, and what does it actually say?
Well, the unit I was in wasn't too worried about pulling G's and stuff, although, I mean, because we weren't flying airplanes. I know for fighter pilots or in the U.S. or jet pilots, not non-commercial, but military jet pilots, fighter pilots, they have the old traditional centrifuge. You know, they spin them around in that and test the how many G's they can take.
But the thing that I was talking about is what they call the G factor in their test battery is actually like a unit for talent.
So what does the G stand for?
Yeah, I'm not sure actually, but they just call it, let's say, genius factor. No, I don't know. But,
well, maybe.
So that was sort of a factor for talent, or how they chose to measure it.
Well, when you go into the military, you take a battery of tests to see what sort of talents and aptitudes you have. And that's done right at the very beginning, regardless of what you want to be, at least when I went in. Then when they made it the all-volunteer, you could start kind of choosing much earlier what you wanted to try and do, and they could give you specific tests for that. I know I just read an article that Naval Special Warfare has had a lot of scandals. U.S. Naval Special Warfare has had a lot of scandals in the last couple of years. And they have said now that they are going to cut down the number of SEAL platoons. And I might be quoting this incorrectly. But to focus more on quality, and they're going to revamp looking at leadership qualities. They're going to have new ways of doing that. The article did not go into what those ways would be, but I think what they're saying is they feel that the quality of leadership has not been what it has been in the past or what it should be. And that said, I'm not picking on any particular people. It's just, yeah, we live in different times, and the way you led people maybe in the 60s is a lot different from the way you're going to lead people in the 20s here, the 2020s. And it's probably true in all cultures.
What are the biggest changes do you think that has happened?
I'm only speculating. I think they're looking now more for it doesn't have to be the hard charging, you know, World War II, Vietnam era type, let's go charge the Fox Hill, you know. or the let's go charge that hill, blah blah blah. Maybe more of the let's have a look at the feasibility of doing this, and what are our alternatives, and what are the consequences of these various scenarios. And they need people that can evaluate that. You know, you not just people who run towards the bullets, although that's important too.
Because
even in esports.
Yeah, but I think now we're pushing on something like the level of complexity has been becoming much, much higher. I mean, you cannot specialize on something and expect that you will do that for the rest of your life anymore. And that's also the reason why esports is here and why you call something sports, even though it's not that much movement. So there must be very much difference in generations there as well when it comes to.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I think the younger generations today, and I suppose you could include the millennials too, although they're starting to get old. if you ask the Generation Z people and the ones before them, I guess, it's a completely different world we live in. It's so much more complex. Your every little move is scrutinized and is likely to be posted somewhere forever. You know, stuck out in the net somewhere, if nowhere else, on Flashback or in the deep dark web, or who knows where these things can end up. So the fact that media is everywhere and we're constantly, when I say under surveillance, I don't mean like people are spying on us, but you know, it's just you're out in the open, you're very public. It wasn't like that before, and that calls for a new generation of leaders. I would think the Again, I'm speculating, okay? I have no context deep inside that could tell me if this is yes or if I'm right or not. But I think what they're looking for is now more of a warrior diplomat with cultural sensitivity. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, not really.
You've got to be able to negotiate the cultures that you're in too. You've got to be able to work with, you know, if you're plopped down in a foreign country and you've got to deal with foreign military, you've got to understand how they operate, what motivates them. You've got to understand that about your enemy, how they operate, what motivates them. And you've also got to be able to conduct a dialogue when necessary. And in fact, if you can conduct the dialogue as opposed to just killing each other. So that's what I mean about, we usually split up warriors and call them shooters, and diplomats are called talkers. So maybe a combination of the two.
I understand what you mean.
A person who can who's equally at home sitting around a negotiating table as he is on the battlefield.
Now I understand what you mean.
Okay.
One problem that we do have, like when it comes to esports, is like it's not a culture. I want to pick your brain on this because it's not a
There's not much left, so go ahead.
I'll take the last.
Okay.
I'll take the last you have. It's I think we're lacking in selfless leadership, and I think we're lacking in collaboration because it's such a young community.
Yeah, this is the all about me generation.
Yes.
So they say, yeah. A huge sense of entitlement. I want what I deserve, and I want it now. I don't want to work for it. I expect it now. I got a college degree. I want the big salary. I want, you know, this, and that. Now, that's a broad generalization, but I've heard it said time and time again. And to a certain extent, it's probably said about every generation that comes along. But maybe more so now, for whatever reason. I still go by the old thing, a leader eats last, you know? I don't know if you watched the season I was on Robinson, but we had, suddenly I was designated to choose who got to make a phone call home to their families.
Yep, I remember that.
And I did not put myself in the running for it, even though I wanted to really bad. But I thought, I can't be selfish like that. Everybody wants to call home. And now I've been given the burden of leadership to choose the people. So I excluded myself from it. But that's what I mean about a leader eats last. You take care of your men and women, and your men and women will take care of you. And maybe even a good leader should put himself out of business. You never know. He creates more leaders. I'll put it that way. Not put himself out of business, but create more leaders.
I have a similar experience, like the leader runs first and start pulling and try to be one of the not afraid to dig in and stand in front.
Exactly.
That's my experience of successful leadership. But my experience is also one thing that can happen, I feel, is that people that want leadership, like people that maybe elbow a lot, mm-hmm. and usually, like my experience is some of those people actually get leaders just because they are a little bit like that. I think especially in Sweden, because people in Sweden tend to be kind of not confrontatious,
mm-hmm.
and that can be a problem sometimes, that the most people that just want the power gets it. I don't know, how do you feel about,
it depends on how you want to look at the term leader. Because they're in charge doesn't make them a leader.
No.
So, I mean, some of these pushy people get in charge, but I'm not sure that I would call them leaders. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
leaders in, yeah. in the true sense of the word. You know, you can have silent leadership. There are lots of different things. What was that book Robin Sharma wrote years ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, The Leader Without a Title? And he wrote about different people in different situations where... I can give you a good example of something different. When I was embedded with the military in Iraq, a lot of the army unit I was with had been called up from the reserves in this small town in Missouri. And their military rank didn't correspond to their civilian jobs. One guy was the mayor of the town, but he had a very low rank. But yet... all the other people in his unit listened to him because he was the mayor of the town. And you know, so there was a real imbalance and stuff. But that's what I mean about, and he was a very good guy. But, you know, they respected him as a leader, obviously based on his civilian performance back home, even though he had a very low rank in the military. So, pushy, loud people can elbow their way to the front, but can they... what did you say? What's the expression in Swedish? Gård över lik. It just doesn't make them a leader in my book. Just makes them in charge.
I have a question, and it's basically from a live example. Like when we're merging teams or putting together the national team, what would be the fastest way to actually form a group and establish a leader? Because in my case, it's usually when I, as the head coach for the national team, we usually pick out teams that are already formed, but I have to take like Dota guys, the Counter-Strike guys, and the Tekken guy, and then we try to form a group that would be called the Swedish national team, and sort of establish some sort of hierarchy, but we have serious lack of time to do that. Like, what would be the most effective way to form a well-functioning group and establish leadership?
Well, I've never tried to form one in esports, and you usually have more time in the real world, so to say, to form a team. Looking at rugby, forming teams there, which we've worked with at the club and to a certain extent, the national or district level, we're we're not looking for superstars. We're looking for team players. I'm sorry, I'm going to offend a lot of people here, but there is one very particularly well-known Swedish football player that wouldn't play on any of my teams. He's just too much of a prima donna. He's a great football player. There's no doubt about it. But it's possibly gone to his head a bit too much. And I would not select somebody like that. That's just me. I want people who will work together as a group, who will listen, who will respect a decision once it's been made, even if they were initially against it, whatever that decision is. So it all comes down to cohesiveness. Now, how do you form that quickly? Well, if I had the answer to that, I'd be charging $100,000 per lecture, which I'm not.
Well, I figure it wasn't easy, but somehow it has to be done, because sometimes I just meet these guys like a couple of weeks before we're going to the World Championship, and they have to introduce each other to one another, and then I have to say, like, well, I'm the coach, but they don't know who I am. but
what do
I'm
you,
supposed
you,
to be.
How big a team? Five?
Well, it depends, but we usually have around a maximum amount of like 11, 12 people. But then we have four different games, so we can have Counter-Strike, Dota, Tekken, and PES.
Okay, so what do you do? Look for superstars?
No, it's usually we have a qualification competition, so the team or the player that wins are the ones that we pick out for the team.
And how long does that go on, the competition?
Well, it's usually just like a couple of weeks at max.
Oh, a couple of weeks. Okay, well, that's not bad. I thought you, when you said it was just short of time, you were talking about, well, you know, we'll run this competition today. So what if somebody's having a bad day? But if you've got 2 weeks, then, or a couple of weeks, then there's plenty of time for them to have good days too. So you can see how it goes.
But we can't really form the sort of the Swedish national team with all of the four different sports and me as the coach until everyone is sort of won the qualification competition.
Yeah.
And then we can start working. So, but then we just have maybe another week to work before we have to.
Well, my first question would be, why is your time constraint so strict? Why, and this isn't a criticism of you, it could be funding or all kinds of things. So why aren't you doing this earlier? If you know when there are going to be competitions, why not start forming your teams or going through your recruiting much earlier?
Yeah, well, that's makes total sense, and that's the problem. We don't have the information until it's sort of a tight deadline. And I've been promoting this, like, we need lots amount of time to be able to do this on a good level, but it's hard because it's a lot of politics.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Yeah. And sometimes, too, I mean, I was recently in another reality show here where I literally got about 6 days' notice.
Mm-hmm. What show was that?
That was In Sami Vildmarken. It was on Discovery Plus and then on Kanal 5.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but how did it go?
Not very well. That's why I've had my knee replaced.
That was unfortunate.
I fell quite badly and ruptured my fremora korsbandet, my anterior cruciate ligament, and that's about the fifth time I've ruptured it in that knee, and the surgeon said, we can't repair this. You're going to have to replace your knee. It's too much arthritis and soft bone, so. Anyway, but yeah, that was very short time frame. But the reason was it was because of the pandemic, and it was going to be filmed in Norway, and they had to get all this permission to get Swedes into Norway because Norway wasn't letting Swedes in. So,
when I hear you talk about like knee replacement, it sounds like you've been through a lot of failure in your life, and competing at a high and competing at a high level, it takes a lot of failure before you succeed with something.
I always tell people never be afraid of the F word. The F word being failure.
Exactly, but how do you change? How would a player change their approach to failure so that they would be more resilient to it like they do?
You're going into deeper issues there that, you know, are part and parcel of a person's personality and behavior. And you're not likely to change that in the short term. That's more of a long-term work that almost everyone has to put in and do. And it's tough. It's really tough. I mean, we've used expressions like fail forward fast, and the quicker you fail, the more you learn while your opponents, you know, aren't failing, they're not learning anything. The key to failing is not that you should fail all the time. It's that you should be able to look at it, analyze it, and see what the learning lesson was. What's the takeaway from this? Maybe not what did I do wrong, but what could I do better? Or what could I do differently? And then build on that and move ahead. Put it behind you. You can't dwell on it. Everybody's going to fail. If I had a dollar for every time I failed, I'd have a mansion somewhere in the south of France on the Mediterranean. It's just part of life. I've got more failures behind me than in all walks of life, and in the military, and in as a diplomat, and as a teacher, and as a husband, and a father, and you know, you name it. We're human. I ran across an interesting quote the other day, or it's a question actually, but it's so simple it makes sense. Why do they put erasers on the end of pencils? Sudgumi. On the end of pencils. Why do they do that?
So that you can make things perfect at once.
Because people make mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
People make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we, you know, once we understand that, once we understand that people make mistakes, and we don't let it dominate our lives or make us crawl back into a cave, you know, yes, it hurts. I hate to lose. I hate to fail, but hey, look at my last two reality shows. I fail miserably. I've injured my left knee on Robinson and had to replace that, my right knee in Sami Vilmark. And so I'm 0-2 for reality shows, but would I try again if I got an opportunity? In a nanosecond. Although yeah. I'm afraid no one will give me an opportunity anymore.
Of course they will. But because the first thing I think about when you're talking about failure like this is like, how could you prepare for something like that? Yeah, you have to get some distance to the things that happening to you. So the first thing came up to my mind is like, okay, you have to meditate. Because that's the only thing you can, okay, not only thing, but that's a very old Eastern tradition to get distance to things that happens around you in your everyday life experience. Is that something?
Yeah, that's certainly one way, but not everybody meditates, and everybody, you know, in a lot, there. Let me see if I can find a way to put this. I think most people who don't meditate, and I don't meditate. I seek stillness. I don't necessarily call it meditation, and I just look at the thoughts as they go by. But I think a lot of people might think, oh, there can't be any thoughts. I've got to, you know, it's just got to be complete emptiness. And oh, here comes a thought. Maybe I'm not meditating. I just think there's a lot of misconceptions about it. But there's certainly nothing wrong with not getting hung up on it, but, you know, as I said, analyzing it, looking at it, and keeping in mind, you didn't fail because you were a bad person. There's nothing wrong with you. That's the way I look at it. And when I look back at mistakes that I have made, some serious mistakes in life, which I won't go into here, I tell myself, you know what? I made those mistakes because of, I made those bad decisions using the tools that I had then, Now I have a whole different set of tools, and I wouldn't make those mistakes. So, you know, there's no sense beating yourself up about these things. You learn from them and move on and make sure you don't repeat them.
Yeah, I usually says that failing is a part of the learning process.
Yeah.
So you have to use like trial and error and try every single possibility sometimes, and eventually you'll get it right.
Yep. You know,
but there will be a lot of failures on your way.
Yeah. There's that old Chinese expression about every bullseye is a result of however many thousand misses when you're shooting a bow and arrow, or even a weapon for that matter, I guess.
My experience is with failure is that the positive thing with it is usually that it stings a lot when you fail. so you remember it. So you really remember your failure, and then you can like remember it to the future to not do it again.
Yeah, well, that's the learning. That's what I say about what's the takeaway. And then the part of the takeaway could be, you know, that was humiliating, or that hurt, or that, you know, I don't want to repeat that.
But there we have an interesting point, because I think the brain is it's programmed to remember failure, but it's hard to sort of tell someone else about your failures, because it can be hard for someone to sort of internalize what it would mean when you try to tell me, like, don't do that. Or if you try to tell your kid, like, crossing the road is dangerous because there are fast cars or whatever. Because
I would call that embodiment, right?
Well, you've got to, I mean, at least in the sense of children, I don't believe in, there's so many different expressions for it. In China, they call it the little emperor syndrome. And over here, it's what, curling parents. And in the U.S., it's helicopter parents. You got to let your kids make some mistakes, not devastating, life-threatening mistakes, but you know, you got to let them fall down and get scraped up. You got to let them get in fights. I mean, this is just part of, I don't know, somebody's going to call up and say, oh no, that guy said kids should fight. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, but we don't even let the kids resolve their own issues amongst each other. How are they supposed to, when they grow up, be able to handle conflict at all?
Exactly. And I've got a theory which is totally ungrounded on in any sort of scientific research, but it's just observation, is that I'm shocked at how many people burn out before 25. In some cases, they've burned out a couple of times. And I'm thinking, how did this happen? Well, it's because we've over protected them. It's not their fault. It's the parents' fault. So we swaddle and we protect and we sweep away and remove all the objects, and they don't get to fail. And then we turn them loose into the real world, and holy shit, they start failing and they haven't learned how to deal with it.
I usually go for controlled risk rather than protection.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the art of parenting is difficult. As for those of you, at least one person there has a child. I know, I heard her in the background.
Yeah.
it's not easy. And these little critters don't come with any manuals, you know, and there are a million different versions of how to raise a kid, but most people end up raising their children. I shouldn't say most people, but a lot of people end up raising their children the way they were raised, but they try to improve on it. You know, they try to do a better job than their parents did. We'll put it that way. And that's the way it should be. I mean, because times change and, you know, I look back and I think of all the things that have happened in my nearly 74 years of, you know, nobody wore crash helmets on bikes, or we didn't have seat belts in cars. And I mean, I'm glad we have them now, but I still don't wear a crash helmet when I ride my bike. I don't know why. I don't think about it. It doesn't even mess up my hair because I'm bald. I have no really good reason. We do tend to protect our kids a lot more. And I don't know. I don't want to. I'm trying to avoid sounding like an old fuddy-duddy.
Don't. We need those as
well.
Well,
yeah, but I mean, if you look a couple of generations back, my dad's generation, 18 years old and charging onto the beaches of Normandy, scared shitless on D-Day. Or 18 years old and being thrown into the jungles in Vietnam, or 18 years old and being thrown into Iraq or Afghanistan, these sort of things. But probably World War II is a better example because it affected more people. And, people today who need safe spaces and timeouts and emotional support animals. And how did we get there?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah,
I like animals too. Trust me. No, but I mean, back in the States, I've seen people carrying. I saw a woman with a pig in the airport one time, and it had a thing on it that said, "I am an emotional support animal."
Yeah,
might it be like people get burned out really early now? That one reason is that just because, like in Sweden, you study for a long time, so. When they burn out at 25, it wasn't that many years from when they just got thrown out into the real world and had to face everything. So that's one reason. Like it's such a long, in earlier decades, people started working earlier and started taking responsibilities earlier. And now it's just like, the kids don't have any responsibilities almost and nothing to care for. For many, many years, and then they like, now let's go. Yep. And it gets too much for them. They get to their first job and just can't handle it.
And one of the other things, though, in all fairness, so I don't want to sound overly critical, is that working today is so different from working when I was, got out of university. You're pretty much on call 24/7. You can be reached anywhere, anytime, everywhere. There was none of that. You left the office or whatever at 5 o'clock on Friday and you didn't look back. So, that is going to tend to burn people out quickly too. If you look at some of the wellness trends that are becoming popular in the world, one of them is being disconnected. Just totally disconnected from the net, from your cell phone, from everything.
I've tried that a couple of times and it's like it's such an experience. Like last summer I was for at least a week, but I was up in the north of Sweden for at least 10 days and I was disconnected, and it's such a big difference. And then think about how to live 80 years ago, when that was the only way to live, you had your, if you were lucky, you had your cell phone at home, like one stationed cell phone, but not with you all the time and not connected. So that's a big difference. And I've gone through burnout. So of course I've been analyzing the reasons for why I did that, and it's. It's
not when you left the embassy, decided to do something else.
I left the embassy to work in Norway, but yes, I crashed a couple of times before I went to Norway, and then I crashed.
Well, the
once
embassy
again.
Is a good place to be burned out. Let me tell you.
They
burn people out left and right.
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't the only one, actually.
Oh no, far from it. This, when I was a consular officer. In New Zealand, a consular officer is the one that stands at the window and interviews people for visas and stuff like that. Kids are, of course, nobody was allowed to bring their cell phones in for security reasons. But so you'd see all these kids would come in and they'd sit down next to each other. And after a while, they'd actually start to talk to each other. But the second they got their cell phones back, their face was stuck into their phones and off they went walking in their own little world. So they're a blessing and, I don't know, maybe a curse in some ways. Mind you, I carry mine almost everywhere I go. No, I take it back. So I was almost 3 weeks on the Robinson without any connection to the outside world. And then this little bit in Sami Viitamäki, which wasn't long at all. But it's useful, I think.
I don't think, if I look back at how, like, when you grow up with a technology around you all the time, it becomes so... you become so used to it so that you can't be without it, and your brain actually don't understand how to work without it because it's such a vital part of being social, like being social. So
you lose your ability to interact with other people.
Absolutely, and I think because I'm reading a lot about this, the technology, how it affects us, and it actually has a lot of agency. It changes our decisions all the time, and we are not very much aware of it. We think that we are in charge all the time, but the more technology gets closer to us, the less we take decisions ourselves. So it's not weird at all when you told me about that, that when they're without their cell phones, of course they're gonna, like, after a while start to socialize, because that's what humans do.
Yeah.
But with what? With a cell phone or with your
mouth? Well, you know, I tell my older son, or not my older, my older son's 41. My younger son, who's turning 15, you know, that I don't mind you gaming. You know, he's got to stop at a certain time on school nights. Weekends are okay. He can game as long as he wants. But I said, the second gaming takes over your life, I'm yanking all these computers out of your room and all your screens and everything, because I want you to have balance in life. You know, and he plays sports. He's played rugby since he was 7 years old. So, you know, the day you come in and say, I don't want to play sports anymore, I just want a game, then, you know, we'll have to have some. Once he's moved out, of course, that's a different story. He's an adult. But balance, I mean, balance is good. And I have become less critical of my son gaming now that I game, because I couldn't understand why, like on a Friday night or a Saturday night, you know, he would only come out to go to the toilet or to grab a Coke or some potato chips or something, and zoom, he'd be back in there again for hours. But he was in the flow, you know? He was in the zone. He had no idea, no conception of time. It was just pure bliss for him. And I can't say that I've gotten into that through my gaming yet, basically because I don't sit there long enough to do it, to get into it. But I can certainly understand him a lot more now, so I'm not as critical.
It's actually interesting because we talked about an article a couple of episodes back. It was a dad who, well, he didn't have the understanding, but he had a son who played a bit too much, I think. So he took his computer screen out in the yard and took his shotgun and just shot it because he didn't want to go to school or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's when it's taking over your life. I mean, and I think a lot of people, again, I shouldn't say a lot of people. I have a bad habit of saying that a lot of people. Some people, some kids aspire to, you know, whether it's I want to be a YouTuber, I want to have a YouTube channel and be an influencer, I want to be a professional gamer. And they tend to look at the ones who have made it, but I'm not sure they understand how hard these people worked and the sacrifices they made to reach that position. It's not easy. And for everyone that reached it, how many didn't? How many mm-hmm. tried and didn't, you know? And these are all factors that when you're trying to raise a child, you try to give them the tools to make good decisions, to evaluate things, be critical of sources, look at consequences, et cetera, et cetera. Try and see the big picture, not just, you know, oh, if I put a few tunes up on YouTube, I'll be, you know, Justin Bieber or something, or I'll be this super gamer. Mind you, I can't name one super gamer. I should, especially in Counter-Strike, I should.
Yeah, again.
Well, yeah. I mean, aside from him, he's my coach. But
exactly.
Of course, yeah. No, I know he is. But I'm big on balance and moderation. But even moderation has to be taken in moderation too. I mean, there are times you need to go overboard, but it's all about balance. And I think that you asked me earlier about how people become more resilient. And I think it's a question of like they say in boxing, you know, if you see the punch, or even martial arts, if you see the punch is coming and you're unable to block it, you roll with it, you know, you already start moving away from that energy to soften the blow. So you just roll with the punches that life, it's hard to explain to a young person. You know, I don't want you to ever learn to like losing, but I want you to learn how to handle it when you do lose.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it makes sense.
And like, be able to
you have
ahead.
You have to be able to cope with the losses, but you still have to, like a Rocky quote, like, it's not about how many times you get knocked down, it's about how many times you get knocked down and get back up again.
Yep, exactly. Well, there's an old Japanese expression that's fall down 7, get up 8.
Yeah,
and I have also seen, actually, and you should know this as well if it's right, Alex. I've seen people being pretty satisfied with actually getting really, really, you know, heavy put down in the fighting cage, like that they enjoy it, to actually have someone that are better than them, you know. Is that something you've witnessed as well? Like that you have the need to do that sometimes, get really beaten up?
Well, I can't say that I've ever personally had the need to be like put down that way, but at least it can be, sometimes you can have a good feeling after those sort of matches, because it's like, whoa, that guy is really good and I want to be that good. And for Rick, I've been competing in martial arts and I've been doing it for a couple of decades, at least training for it, but I've mm-hmm. been in the national team. So, I've had some high level competitions, and some of those, they just whooped my ass, but it was, but it was still amazing. It was like, whoa, these guys are good. And,
it must be horror to be the best. Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, it, for me in Sweden, it was sort of like that, because then I was sort of expecting it on myself to always win. And if I didn't win, it was a definitive loss. Even a bad match could be a loss. Like one season, my goal wasn't to not lose a game. It was to not lose any points. So because I did jiu-jitsu, and you could... So if you totally put down the opponent, they don't get any points and you still win. But so my goal was to, for the whole season, don't let anyone take a single point. So it was quite easy for me to fail that game plan, because one point would have ruined the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, and that wasn't really a healthy mindset for me, I could say, but that was a game plan.
Well, if you set the bar too high, you are setting yourself up for failure, of course. There's another expression I talk about when I'm talking with the business community, and it's about your commitments. It's to under-promise and over-deliver. If someone says, can you have that report ready by Friday, you know, or when do you think you can have it ready, you give them a much longer time. You think you can do it in a week, but you tell them you can get it done in 2 weeks. So you under-promise, but then you over-deliver, because you get it done in a week ahead of time and you look like a superstar. If he says, can you get it done in a week, and you get it done in a week, you've just done the standard.
I actually did that in table tennis in my mind. I always took 3 points away from my own, from my own score. So
right.
That I was always like, I was always chasing. So the opponent towards me, that was how I hacked to, because every time I was close to winning, I got stiff. So I always had to feel like I was chasing.
That's one of the probably most famous expressions in the SEAL teams. The only easy day was yesterday.
Yeah, that's a good saying. going into the end of this pod, I still have some questions for sure. For like, how would you recommend like people belonging to generations where people don't game that much to maybe start gaming?
You bet. One of the female members of the Silver Sniper took it upon herself to start a senior gaming group, which is just gained members left and right. And she goes by the name Triggerfinger. They have their own gaming sessions aside from the Silver Snipers. It couldn't have come at a better time because, well, one, you know, older people, especially, you could be alone, you know, you've lost a partner, and you're just socially isolated. And now, of course, with the pandemic, it's even worse. And, you know, and she has found through doing this that there have been a lot of closet gamers out there, you know, old people that have been gaming and never told anybody.
Yeah, I can bet. How can you find this group?
I don't know if they must have their own, I think it's just called Senior Gamers. I'd have to, hang on one second.
Yeah, look it up maybe we can save that to afterwards if you will, yeah. So we can like put it out there and recommend people.
Yeah, yeah. Because I get a listing every time a new member joins, you know, it comes into my feed. But I don't know if she's done that through the Silver Snipers or if it's through a separate group.
No. Let us know afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
But I think it's great. And if nothing else, it helps bridge generational fences. She was saying when she got chosen to be in this lady, Triggerfinger, when she got chosen to be in the Silver Snipers, her grandkids said, "Oh, wow, we got the coolest grandmother in the whole world." So, you know, you get and we are treated like superstars when we go to these places, not because we're so damn good, but because we're breaking norms.
Yeah, you're a symbol of some kind.
When I go out and sometimes I'll play wingman if just for the heck of it and link up. And I linked up with a German kid who was 14 or 15 and we were talking and I was trying to explain to him. I said, "Well, look, I haven't played wingman. This is the first time. And you know, so maybe you might need to guide me a little bit through the map and stuff. I'm not familiar with it." And we were talking and he said, "So how long have you been gaming?" You know? And I said, "Oh, not too long, a couple of years." You know? And finally we got around to my age. He goes, "Holy shit." He says, "You're older than my grandfather." And he wouldn't believe me. I said, "Well, you go Google the Silver Snipers and you'll see my photo on the website," which he did. He said, "Oh my God."
But the thing is, I think a lot of kids out there or young adults, I think they miss being understood or sharing something with their parents when they game so much. I mean, there's a gap there that needs to be filled. Definitely. Somehow.
Definitely. And I guess in the past, the gap was probably music. You know, it was very, very seldom that one generation appreciated the music of the generation that came after them. With one notable exception, the baby boomers, you know, because we were the rock and roll people that never stopped rocking and rolling, and were fairly open to all different types of music. Although I have to admit, I've never really been able to get my head around gangster rap, but pretty much everything else is fun.
And that connects to something I usually say, like I try to do the parallel with explaining like why I think esport will be even bigger in the future is because it keeps staying in all of the coming generations. It's like a music genre that people before hip hop that was too old to catch on to it. It's like some might like it, but most of people will be not understanding what's right. You know, is this really music, you know, and stuff like that. But then it keeps on. Like it's not like it was for one generation. It's just it started to exist in the, you know, it started to get really popular in the 80s and then it just kept on and it still exists. Sure, it sounds different. It will be the same with esports, but I guess, I mean, Yeah, that's how I see esport. It's something that it didn't really exist before a certain time, and that way, you know, there's a gap between the generations, but it's moving upwards all the time. It stays.
Yeah. But that's true with other sports too. I mean, look at snowboarding and other sports that have made the Olympics. Isn't esports being talked about, or has it made the Olympics yet?
The next Olympics, it's probably going to be a week before that. There's going to be a special Olympics with esports, but it's not going to be the Olympics. But yeah,
but that's
they
the
have
first
the conversation.
Step.
Yeah, they have the conversation. It's being forced into it. I mean, you can't deny esports anymore because it's the numbers are talking.
Well, you know, to me, esports is a natural step after, and now I'm talking about the U.S. I don't know if people do it so much over here, but in the U.S., fantasy football, American football, you know, where is a big thing where you pick your teams and your players and you bet money and all kinds of stuff. Well, the next step is to play it yourself, you know, with esports, and the games and the graphics get better and better.
Absolutely.
Do you, now I'm stepping to a totally different question, do you enjoy watching esports?
I haven't watched any. I probably should go and watch some of the Counter-Strike competitions. I know a couple of the other Silver Snipers do. I haven't. I've played an esport rugby a few years back, but I don't know, it was back in the days when you had a DVD and you stuck it into an Xbox or whatever, or downloaded the game, I can't remember. I played that with my son and that was a lot of fun, but I haven't really watched any.
Then I think you and I and maybe the other guys are gonna have a beer on a esport bar someday. Well, and we can look at it together.
That'd be good.
Sounds good.
That'd be good,
because there's one on Sveavägen actually.
Is there? Where?
Yeah, it's an esport bar. Have any of you other been there? I haven't been there myself, but on Sveavägen in the city.
It's a Kappa bar.
Yeah.
But where on Sveavägen? It's a long street.
Exactly, it's a very long street.
It's quite close to Hard Rock Cafe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's heading north.
Yeah. Kappa bar is like, it's a sports bar, but it's like a sports bar, but it's just only esports.
Esports.
Esports, like theme, the whole thing. And it's, you know, they have one in Malmö and one is opening up in Örebro. So it seems like they're doing quite well. And it's, people are interested in going out, drinking a beer and watching esports.
The new
Aleris. I had no idea that existed.
Huh. We'll have a look at it someday.
Yeah, I learned something new.
Absolutely.
Actually,
so,
I learned a lot of things new.
I am so excited to have had you here. I'm so thankful for you stepping in and visiting us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I mean, it was a real pleasure to, it's a real pleasure to see you again and also to meet your colleagues there. I appreciate it. I'm humbled that you would have me on.
Yeah, it was super interesting to hear about all your experience. So we're humbled to be in your presence.
Oh, no.
Is there any upcoming match with the Silver Snipers that, you know, we and maybe the viewers can watch? Do you know any? Is there any schedule?
There are none scheduled yet. We're hoping for something in the summer when maybe some of the restrictions are lifted. The Lenovo and the advertising company that we work through have had some feelers. Before that, I mean, the Silver Snipers went to Russia, to Ukraine, and I mean, they've been interviewed by CNN and you name it, Japanese TV programs. We did one against, that was, must have been the tail end of the summer, last summer in August, an online competition from down on Inferno Online. We played a North American team and a European team in kind of a round robin thing. But since then, no. It's been really hard. I mean, we can't even get together in person because all of us are so old and we haven't been vaccinated yet.
And so most of the matches you have played, like when Silver Snipers play, like now it's a real match. Then it's been offline. Is that the
Well, no, it's, I mean, we would go somewhere, like we jumped on a bus and went down to Jönköping to DreamHack and sat and played there. I don't know what they did when they went to Russia and Ukraine because I wasn't a member then. But I mean, you really don't need to travel anywhere. It's just fun. I mean, you could do it everything online, and maybe it will be that way from now on. Who knows? The pandemic has brought a lot of changes to society that will actually boost online things, in particular, probably esports.
Yeah, but I really hope it ends because I mean the going to like DreamHack in Jönköping and stuff like that, it's a lot of fun.
Oh,
So
I
I
was blown away.
so I hope it ends so we can all go to like see the real, see esports in on a offline as we call it. It's still, yeah. So it's so much more fun.
I
But
thought it
really,
was
yeah.
really cool.
But really, thank you so much for being a guest in our pod.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And I hope all of you that listen also enjoy this. Tune in to our next pod a week from now.
Which will be in Swedish.
Yeah, from
Yeah.
now on, absolutely.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.